Chapter 24. Stars filled the window. A wild grapevine had grown around the little rectangle, and a pair of its tendrils hung down and swung in the breeze like the dark pendulum of a noiseless clock.
"I'm not really crying,"
Elizabeth said.
"And if I do cry, don't worry about it. It's not me. It's just something in me that wants to get out. Sometimes crying is all you have. It isn't sorrow. I am happy."
She was lying in his arms with her head pressed against his shoulder. The bed was wide and made of old dark walnut. Both ends were high and curved. A walnut dresser stood in the corner, and in front of the window were a table and two chairs. On the wall hung an old glass case containing a bride's crown of artificial myrtle, and a mirror in which the vine and the pale, wavering light from outside moved, dark and bright.
"I am happy," Elizabeth said. "So much has happened in these weeks that I can't press it all into myself. I have tried. It won't go. Tonight you must be patient with me."
"I wish I could take you out of this city into a village somewhere."
"It doesn't matter where I am when you're away."
"It does matter. Villages aren't bombed.
Sooner or later, they are certain to stop bombing us here. There's hardly anything of the city left standing. I can't go away as long as I have to work in the factory. I'm happy that I have this enchanted room and Frau Witte."
She was breathing more quietly.
"I'll be through with me right away," she said. "You mustn't think me too hysterical. I am happy. But it's a fluctuating happiness, not a uniform cow happiness."
"Cow happiness," Graeber said. "Who wants that?"
"I don't know. I think I could stand quite a lot of it for quite a long time."
"So could I. I just don't like to admit it because for the present we can't have it."
10 years of safe, good, uniform, middle-class cow happiness. I believe even a whole lifetime of it wouldn't be too much.
Graeber laughed. "That comes from living such a damned interesting existence. Our forebears had other ideas. They longed for adventure and hated the cow happiness they had.
Not we. We have become simple human beings again with simple desires."
Elizabeth looked at him.
"Do you want to sleep now? A whole night of unbroken sleep. Who knows when you'll have the chance again after tomorrow night?"
"I can get enough sleep while I'm on my way. It may take a couple of days to get there."
"Will you ever have a bed?"
"No. The best I can hope for after tomorrow is a field cot or a sack of hay from time to time. You get used to it fast enough. It's not bad. Summer is coming soon. Russia is only horrible in winter."
"Perhaps you'll have to stay there for another winter, too."
"If we go on retreating this way, we'll be in Poland by winter. Or even in Germany. Then it won't be so cold, and it's a cold you're used to."
"Now she will ask when I'm coming back on furlough," he thought. "I wish we had all that behind us. She has to ask, and I have to answer, and I wish it was over. Already I am no longer wholly here, but what there is of me here feels as though it had no skin, and nevertheless it can't really be injured. It's just more sensitive than an open wound."
He glanced at the vine swinging in front of the window and at the shifting silver and gray in the mirror, and it seemed to him as though a mystery stood close behind it and must in the next moment reveal itself. Then they heard the sirens.
"Let's stay here,"
Elizabeth said.
"I don't want to get dressed and rush off to a cellar."
"All right." Graeber went to the window. He pushed the table aside and looked out. The night was bright and motionless. The garden shone in the moonlight. It was an unreal night, and a good night for air raids. He saw Frau Witte come out of the door. Her face was very pale. He opened the window.
"I was just coming to wake you,"
she shouted through the noise. Graeber nodded.
"Cellar, Leibnizstrasse,"
he heard. He waved. Then he saw her go back into the house. He waited a moment longer. She did not come out again. She too was staying at home. He was not surprised.
It was almost as if it had to be that way. She did not need to leave her house. Garden and house seemed protected through some unknown magic. It was as though they remained noiseless and untouched in the fury that roared over them. The trees stood still behind the pale silver of the lawn. The bushes did not move. Even the vine outside the window had stopped swinging. The little island of peace lay under the moon as though in a glass shelter from which the storm of destruction rebounded. Graber turned around. Elizabeth had sat up in bed. Her shoulders shimmered palely, and where they rounded, there were soft shadows. Her breasts were firm and bold and looked larger than they were. Her mouth was dark and her eyes very transparent and almost colorless. She had braced her arms behind her on the pillows, and she sat in the bed like someone who had suddenly come in from far away, and for an instant she was as alien and quiet and mysterious as the garden outside, in the moon confronting the end of the world. "Frau Witte is staying too," Graber said.
"Come."
As he walked toward the bed, he saw his face in the gray and silver mirror. He did not recognize it. It was the face of someone else.
"Come,"
Elizabeth said once more. He leaned over her. She put her arms around him.
"It doesn't matter what happens," she said.
"Nothing can happen," he replied. "Not tonight." He did not know why he believed that. It had something to do with the garden and the light in the mirror, and with Elizabeth's shoulders, and a vast, expansive quietude that suddenly filled him to the uttermost. "Nothing can happen," he repeated. With one hand, he took hold of the covers and threw them to the floor. She lay there naked and strong. From her hips sprang long, powerful legs. It was a body that narrowed from shoulders and breasts to a flat depression at the belly. The upper thighs were not thin, but seemed to swell and plunge into the dark triangle. It was the body of a young woman, and no longer that of a girl. He felt her in his arms. She slid against him, and it seemed to him as though a thousand hands intertwined and held him and bore him up. Nowhere was there any longer any space between. Everything was close and tight. It was no longer the tumult of the first days. It was a slow, steady rising that rushed over everything and swept away words, boundaries, the horizon, and then the self. He lifted his head. He was coming back from a great distance. He listened. He did not know how long he had been away. Outside, all was silent. He thought he must be mistaken and lay listening. He heard nothing, no explosions and no more anti-aircraft firing. He shut his eyes and sank back. Then he awoke again. "They didn't come, Elizabeth," he said.
"They did,"
she murmured. They lay side by side. Graber saw the covers on the floor and the mirror and the open window. He had thought the night would never end, but he felt time creeping slowly back again into the stillness. The vines outside the window swung once more in the breeze. Their shadowy images moved in the mirror, and distant sounds began again. He looked over at Elizabeth. She had her eyes closed. Her mouth was open, and she was breathing deeply and calmly. She was not yet back. He was back. He had already begun to think again. She was always away longer. "I wish I could lose myself too," he thought, "completely and for a long time." It was something for which he envied her, for which he loved her, and which frightened him a little. She was some place where he could not follow her, or not for long enough. It was that, perhaps, which frightened him. He felt himself suddenly alone, and in a strange fashion, inferior. Elizabeth opened her eyes.
"What became of the airplanes?"
"I don't know." She pushed back her hair.
"I'm hungry."
"So am I. We have lots of things to eat." Graber got up and fetched the canned goods he had brought with him from Binding's cellar. Here's chicken and veal, and there's even a potted hare with compote to go with it.
Let's have the hare and the compote.
Graber opened the jars. He loved Elizabeth for not helping him, but lying there and waiting instead. He could not stand women who, still surrounded by mystery and darkness, hurriedly transformed themselves again into busy housewives.
Every time I look at these things, I feel ashamed, he said. I acted pretty badly toward Alphonse. He may have acted badly toward someone else, too. That evens out. Were you at his funeral? No. There were too many party members in uniform there. I didn't go along. I just listened to Group Leader Hildebrandt's oration. He said we should all imitate Alphonse and fulfill his last wish. He meant remorseless strife against the foe. But Binding's last wish was something different. Alphonse was in his pajamas in the cellar with a blonde and a negligee.
Graber emptied the meat and the compote into two dishes, which Frau Witte had given them. Then he cut the bread and opened a bottle of wine. Elizabeth got up. She stood naked in front of the walnut bed.
You really don't look like someone who has been sitting bent over for months sewing army overcoats, Graber said. You look like someone who does gymnastics every day.
She laughed.
Gymnastics? You only do gymnastics when you are in despair.
Really? That would never have occurred to me.
Only then, Elizabeth said. Exercise until you can't move anymore. Run around until you are dead tired. Clean up the room 10 times. Brush your hair till your head hurts and so on.
Does that help?
Only with the penultimate despair, when you don't want to think anymore. In the final despair, nothing helps except to let yourself drop.
And then?
Wait until the tide of life somehow flows back again. I mean the life that keeps you breathing, not the one you live.
Graber raised his glass.
I believe we know too much about despair for our age.
Let's forget it.
We know too much about forgetting, too, Elizabeth said. We'll forget that as well.
All right.
Long live Frau Kleinert, who put up this hare. And long live Frau Witte, who gave us the garden out there in this room.
They emptied their glasses. The wine was cold and aromatic and young.
Graber refilled the glasses. The moon stood golden in them. My beloved, Elizabeth said. It's good to be up at night. It's so much easier to talk then.
That's true. At night you are a healthy young child of God and not a seamstress of military overcoats. And I am not a soldier.
At night, one is what he was intended to be, not what he has become.
Perhaps. Graber looked at the hare, the compote, and the bread. That makes us pretty superficial people. We don't do much at night except sleep and eat.
And make love. That's not superficial.
And drink.
And drink,
Elizabeth said, holding out her glass. Graber laughed.
Theoretically, we should really be sentimental and sad and should be carrying on deep conversations. Instead of that, we've eaten half a hare and we find life wonderful and give thanks to God. That's better, don't you think?
It's the only thing. If you make no demands, everything is a gift.
Did you learn that in the field?
No, here.
That's good. It's really all you have to learn, isn't it?
Yes. After that, all you need is a bit of luck.
Have we had that too?
Yes. We have had everything there is.
You're not sad because it's over?
It's not over. It's just changing. She looked at him. No, he said.
I am sad. I am so sad I think I shall die tomorrow when I leave you. But when I try to think how it would have to be for me not to be sad, then there's just one answer. Never to have met you. In that case, I wouldn't be sad, but would be going away empty and indifferent. And when I think that, then the sadness is not sadness anymore. It's black happiness, the reverse side of happiness.
Elizabeth stood up.
Perhaps I haven't put that right, Graber said. Do you understand what I mean? I do understand. and you have put it very well. One couldn't put it better. I knew you would say it.
She got up and came over to him. He felt her. Suddenly, she no longer had a name, and had all the names in the world. For an instant, something like an unbearable white light flamed through him. He realized that all was one, departure and return, possession and loss, life and death, past and future, and that always and everywhere the unchangeable countenance of eternity was there, and nothing could be obliterated. It was the last afternoon. They were sitting in the garden. The cat stole by. She was pregnant and completely occupied with herself, paying no attention to anyone.
I hope I'm going to have a child,
Elizabeth said suddenly. Graber stared at her. A child? Why?
Why not?
A child? In these times? Do you think you're going to have one?
I hope so.
He looked at her. I believe I'm supposed to say or do something now and kiss you and be surprised and tender, Elizabeth. I can't do it. I hadn't thought about a child until now.
You have no need to, either. It doesn't really concern you at all. Besides, I'm not sure yet.
A child. It would grow up just in time for a new war, as we did for this one. Think of all the misery it would be born to. The cat came by again. She was creeping along the path to the kitchen.
Children are born every day, Elizabeth said.
Graber thought of the Hitler Youth and of the children who had denounced their parents. Why do we talk about it? He said. It's only a wish, after all. Or isn't it?
Don't you ever want to have a child?
I don't know. In peacetime, perhaps. I haven't thought about it before. There's so much that has been poisoned all around us that the ground will still be contaminated for years. How can one want a child in such circumstances?
For that very reason, Elizabeth said.
Why?
To educate it against that. What's to happen if the people who are against everything that is happening now don't want to have children? Are only the barbarians to have them? Then who's to put the world to rights again?
Is that why you want to have one?
No. I only thought about that just now.
Graber was silent. There was nothing to be said against her argument. She was right. You're too quick for me, he said. I have not got used to being married, and now all of a sudden I'm to decide whether or not I want a child. Elizabeth laughed and stood up.
You haven't noticed the simplest part of it, that it isn't just a child I want, but your child. And now I'm going to discuss dinner with Frau Witte. It's to be a canned masterpiece.
Graber was sitting alone in his chair in the garden. The sky was full of clouds, tinged with red. The day was over. It had been a stolen day. He had overstayed his furlough by 24 hours. Although he had reported for departure, he had stayed. Now it was evening, and in an hour he had to be off. He had gone to the post office once more, but no further word had come from his parents. He had arranged everything that could be arranged. Frau Witte had already agreed to let Elizabeth go on living in her house. He had examined its cellar. It was not deep enough to be safe, but it was well built. He had gone to look at the public cellar in the Leibnizstrasse as well. It was as good as most of the others in the city. Calmly, he leaned back in his chair. He could hear the clattering of pots in the kitchen. It had been a long furlough. 3 years, not 3 weeks. Sometimes they still seemed to him not altogether secure, and they had been built hastily on uncertain ground. Nevertheless, he wanted to believe they were secure enough. He heard Elizabeth's voice. He thought over what she had said about a child. It was as though suddenly a wall had been broken through. An opening had appeared, and behind it, wavering and indistinct, a garden, a bit of the future. Graber had never thought beyond that wall. When he had arrived, he had hoped to find something and seize it and possess it in order to be able to leave it behind when he went away again. Something that bore his name, and with it bore himself. but the thought of a child had never occurred to him. He looked into the twilight that hung between the lilac bushes. How unending it would be if one continued to pursue it, and how strange it was to feel that the life which had always hitherto ceased for him at the wall might go on, and that what he had up to then regarded almost as booty hastily seized might sometime become an assured possession to be handed on to an alien, unborn existence in a future that had no end and was full of a tenderness he had never known. What expanses there were, and what presentiments, and how greatly something in him wanted it and did not want it, and yet wanted it. This poor and comforting illusion of immortality. "The train leaves at 6 o'clock, he said. "I have taken care of all my things. Now I must leave. Don't come with me to the station. I want to leave from here, taking you with me in my mind the way you exist here, not in the crowds and the embarrassment of the station. My mother went with me last time. I couldn't do anything to stop her. It was dreadful for her and for me. It took me quite a while to get over it, and later it was always what I remembered. The weeping, tired, perspiring woman on the station platform, not my mother as she really was. Do you understand that? Yes. All right. Then let's do it this way. It will be one burden the less. Besides, you oughtn't to see me when I have been reduced again to a mere number. Just another uniform loaded down like a donkey. I want to part from you the way we are here. And now take this money. I have it left over. Out there, I won't need it. I don't need any money, Ernst. I earn enough for myself. I can't spend it out there. Take it and buy yourself a dress. A senseless, impractical, beautiful dress to go with your little gold cap. I'll use it to send packages to you. Don't send me any. We have more to eat out there than you have here. But buy yourself a dress. I learned something when you bought that hat. Promise me that you will buy a dress. Or isn't there enough for that? There's enough. It will even do for a pair of shoes as well. That's perfect. Buy yourself a pair of golden shoes. All right, Elizabeth said. Golden shoes with high heels and light as a feather. I'll run to meet you in them when you come back. Graber took out of his knapsack the dark painted icon he had brought with him to give to his mother. Here's something I found in Russia. Keep it. She did not take it. Her face was suddenly distracted. No, Ernst. Give it to someone else, or take it back with you. It's too much goodbye, too final. Take it back. He looked at the picture. I found it in a ruined house, he said. Perhaps there's no luck in it. I hadn't thought of that. He put it back again. It was a Saint Nicholas on a golden ground with many angels. If you like, I'll take it to the church, Elizabeth said. The one where we slept. The Katharinenkirche. The one where we slept, he thought. Yesterday that was still close. Now it's already infinitely far away. They won't take it, he said. It's a different kind of religion. The trustees of the God of Love are not especially tolerant of one another. He reflected that he might have put the picture with Cruz's ashes in the grave of Blumer, the cathedral capitulary. But very likely that, too, would have been just one more sacrilege. He did not look back. He walked neither too slow nor too fast. The knapsack was heavy and the street was very long. When he turned the corner, he turned many corners. For a moment, the perfume of Elizabeth's hair was still about him. Then it was drowned out by the smell of old fires, by the sultriness of the late afternoon, and by the rotten, sweet smell of decay that rose out of the ruins in the warm air. He crossed the embankment. One side of the Lindenallee was burned black. The other was in greenleaf. The river was choked and crept sluggishly over concrete, straw, sacking, the broken remnants of docks and beds. Suppose an air raid should come now, he thought. I would have to take cover and would have an excuse for missing the train. What would Elizabeth say if I suddenly stood before her? He thought about it. He did not know. But everything that had been good this time would probably turn into pain. It was the same as at a station when a train was late in leaving and you still had half an hour's time to labor through an embarrassed conversation. Besides, it would do him no good. During a raid, the train would not leave, and he would get there in time just the same. He came to Bramschestrasse. It was from here that he had first made his way into the city. The bus that had brought him was standing there waiting. He climbed in. After 10 minutes, they started. The station, meanwhile, had been moved again. Now it was a roof of corrugated tin camouflaged against airplanes. At one side, sheets of gray cloth had been stretched. Next to them, as concealment, artificial trees had been set up, and there was a stall out of which a wooden cow peered. 2 aged horses were grazing in a field. The train was ready and waiting. A number of cars bore the sign, "For military personnel only." A guard was inspecting papers. Nothing was said about the fact that Graeber was a day late. He got in and found a seat beside the window. After a while, 3 more men entered. A non-com, a lance corporal with a scar, and an artillery man who immediately began to eat. A field kitchen was rolled along the platform. 2 young student nurses appeared, accompanied by an older nurse with an iron swastika worn as a brooch.
"There's coffee," the non-com said. "Just look."
"Not for us," the lance corporal replied. "That's for a transport of recruits who are going out for the first time. I heard about it earlier. There's to be a speech, too. They don't do that sort of thing for us anymore." A crowd of evacuees was led up. They were counted off and stood in 2 lines, with their cardboard boxes and valises, staring at the coffee urn. A couple of SS officers appeared. They were wearing elegant boots and riding breeches, and they wandered like storks along the station platform. 3 more men, returning from leave, entered the compartment. One of them opened the window and leaned out. Outside stood a woman with a child. Graeber looked at the child and then looked at the woman. She had a wrinkled neck, thick eyelids, thin, pendulous breasts, and wore a faded summer dress with windmills printed on it. Everything seemed to him clearer than usual. The light and everything he saw.
"Well then, Heinrich," the woman said.
"Yes, take care of yourself, Maria. Regards to all."
"Yes."
They looked at each other in silence.
A few men with musical instruments stationed themselves in the middle of the platform.
"How noble," the lance corporal said. "The young cannon fodder goes off to a musical accompaniment. I thought they'd cut that out long ago."
"They might at least give us some of the coffee," the non-com replied. "After all, we're old fighting men, and we're going out too."
"Wait until evening, then you'll get it as soup." There was the sound of marching feet and commands. The recruits came by. Almost all of them were very young. There was only a scattering of husky older men. They came, no doubt, from the SA or the SS.
"Not many of those fellows need to shave," the lance corporal said. "Just look at the young sprouts. Children. That's what we've got to depend on out there."
The recruits formed up. Non-coms bawled at them. Then there was silence. Someone began a speech.
"Shut the window," the lance corporal said to the man whose wife was outside.
The man made no reply. The order's voice rattled on as though it came from 10 vocal cords. Graeber leaned back and shut his eyes. Heinrich continued to stand at the window. He had not heard what the lance corporal said. Embarrassed, speechless, and sad, he stared at Maria. Maria stared back in just the same way.
"It's good that Elisabeth is not here," Graeber thought.
The voice finally ceased. The 4 musicians played Deutschland, Deutschland über alles, and the Horstfessel song. They played both songs fast and just 1 stanza of each. No one in the compartment moved. The lance corporal was picking his nose and staring disinterestedly at the result. The recruits got into their car. The coffee urn followed them. After a while, it came back empty.
"Those whores," the non-com said. "They let us old military men die of thirst."
The artillery man in the corner stopped eating for a moment.
"What?"
he asked.
"Whores," I said. "What are you eating anyway, veal?"
The artillery man bit into his sandwich.
"Pork," he said shortly.
Pork.
The non-com looked over the men in the car one after the other. He was searching for sympathy. The artilleryman was not interested. Heinrich was still standing at the window.
Regards to Aunt Berta, too,
he said to Maria.
Yes.
They were silent again.
Why don't we leave? Someone asked. It's after 6 already.
Perhaps we're waiting for a general.
Generals fly.
They had to wait for a half hour more.
Now go along, Maria,
Heinrich said from time to time.
I can wait.
The little one must have his supper.
He has the whole evening to eat it.
They were silent again for a time.
Regards to Joseph, too,
Heinrich said finally.
Yes, all right, I'll tell him.
The artilleryman let out an enormous fart, sighed deeply, and went to sleep at once. It was as though the train had only been waiting for that. Slowly it began to move.
Well then, regards to all, Maria. To you too, Heinrich.
The train moved faster. Maria was running beside the car.
Take good care of the little one, Maria.
Yes, Heinrich. And you take care of yourself.
Of course, of course.
Graeber saw the woebegone face of the woman running beneath the window. She ran as though it was a matter of life and death to be able to stare at Heinrich for 10 seconds longer. And then suddenly he saw Elizabeth. She was standing behind the station shed. She could not have been seen from the train before. He was in doubt for only a second, then he saw her face clearly. It was so completely at a loss that it seemed lifeless. He leaped up and seized Heinrich by the coat collar.
Let me at the window,
he shouted. Suddenly everything was forgotten. He no longer understood why he had come to the station alone. He no longer understood anything. He had to see her. He had to shout. He had failed to say the most important thing. He jerked at the back of Heinrich's neck. Heinrich was hanging far out. He had braced his elbows on the outside of the window frame.
Regards to Lisa, too,
he shouted above the rattling.
Let me by. Get away from the window. My wife's out there.
Graeber threw one arm around Heinrich's shoulder and pulled. Heinrich kicked out backward. He caught Graeber in the shin.
And take good care of everything,
he shouted. The woman could no longer be heard. Graeber kicked Heinrich in the knee and pulled at his shoulders. Heinrich did not let go. He waved with one hand. With the other hand and elbow, he maintained himself in the window. The train swung around a curve. Over Heinrich's head, Graeber saw Elizabeth. She was already far away and very small, standing alone in front of the shed. Graeber waved over the straw-like bristles of Heinrich's head. Perhaps she could still see the hand. But she could not see who was waving. A cluster of houses came by, and the station was no longer there. Heinrich slowly detached himself from the window.
You damn!
Graeber began furiously and stopped. Heinrich turned around. Big tears were running down his face. Graeber let his hands fall.
Oh, shit.
Man, what language, the Lance Corporal said.